Next on Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon.
Wilderness life is difficult. Wilderness life is weary. Wilderness life faces all sorts of challenges. And that's what the nation of Israel demonstrated for us. That's what we understand by Israel out in the wilderness, heading to the promised land. God going before them. God bringing them. It pictures the whole life of sanctification, the whole struggle after you've come to Christ and where you're going.
We always tend to look at wilderness life as something that is unnecessary, a waste of time in the process of getting where we need to be spiritually. But as we'll see today, here on Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon, wilderness life is essential and necessary in the Christian life if we are to grow at all. We're in Genesis today, taking a look at chapter 32, verses 1 through 32, Jacob becomes Israel. Here's Pastor Chris Gordon with today's program.
Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." So he called the name of that place Mahanaim. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau's brother in the land of Seir, the country of Edom, instructing them, "Thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male servants, and female servants. I have sent to tell my lord in order that I may find favor in your sight." And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to your brother Esau, and he is coming to meet you, and there are 400 men with him." And Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. He divided the people who were with him, and the flocks and herds and camels into two camps, thinking, "If Esau comes to the one camp and attacks it, then the camp that is left will escape." And Jacob said, "O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, O Lord, who said to me, 'Return to your country and to your kindred, that I may do you good,' I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I've become two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children. But you said, 'I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude.'" So he stayed there that night. And from what he had with him, he took a present for his brother Esau: 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes, 20 rams, 30 milking camels and their calves, 4 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. These he handed over to his servants. Every drove by itself and said to his servants, "Pass on ahead of me and put a space between drove and drove." He instructed the first, "When Esau, my brother, meets you and asks you, 'To whom do you belong? Where are you going? And who are these? Whose are these ahead of you?' Then you shall say, 'They belong to your servant Jacob. They are a present sent to my lord Esau. And moreover, he is behind us.' He likewise instructed the second and the third and all who followed the droves. You shall say the same thing to Esau when you find him. And you shall say, 'Moreover, your servant Jacob is behind us.' For he thought, 'I may appease him with the present that goes ahead of me. And afterward, I shall see his face. Perhaps he will accept me.' So the present passed on ahead of him, and he himself stayed that night in the camp. The same night he rose and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of Jabbok. And he took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had. And Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the day is broken." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you've striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of that place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." The sun rose upon him as he passed Penuel, limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of the thigh. May the Lord bless the hearing of his word. For the first time in the Bible, we have the name Israel. It's powerful. God here changes Jacob's name to Israel. And that is so important because future generations of Israel were to look back at Jacob and see their story. They were to identify with the life of Jacob. They were to look at their beginnings through him and understand it and think about it. That's why we've been tracing the whole thing. What makes it so powerful is that it has been a wonderful story, a great demonstration of God's grace in this man's life. What have you seen? A man whose name meant deceit or schemer has been running his entire life, and he finds himself in bondage to this cruel man Laban outside of the promised land for all of these years. And then in the past weeks, we've been studying God bringing this man home. And it's been powerful. Jacob's deliverance, seeing God's great power demonstrated, and it helps us to understand what salvation looks like. That's been the most exciting thing to study this, is to see that it's telling a greater story. It's showing us a greater story. It's helping you understand the entire plan of salvation, which would later unfold in Israel itself. When they were brought to Egypt, and they were put under a hard master in Pharaoh, and they were in bondage, and God would bring them out with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm, and God would bring them to the sea, and he would say, "Stand still and see the salvation of your God." And there would come Pharaoh right behind him, Israel, attacking. And God would confront the enemy. We sung about that. Drown them in the midst of the sea. And he would bring out Israel safe to the other side. A great crossing event. The greatest moment of the Old Testament that spoke of the cross. Spoke of passing from death to life. But you see, then they went out into the wilderness. And they had no idea how hard it would be. Wilderness life's hard. Wilderness life is difficult. Wilderness life is weary. Wilderness life faces all sorts of challenges. And that's what the nation of Israel demonstrated for us. That's what we understand by Israel out in the wilderness, heading to the promised land. God going before them. God bringing them. It pictures the whole life of sanctification, the whole struggle after you've come to Christ and where you're going. And how he's directing life and providence. Fitting every circumstance. Sometimes it's challenging. Sometimes it's very difficult. And that's what you have before you this morning. You never knew how hard it would be, did you? I mean, you really can't believe the prosperity, guys, because it doesn't fit experience, does it? It's hard. But the Lord said all the way he'd be with you. The Lord the whole way made a commitment. The Lord said, "I won't leave you. I won't forsake you." What do you think that looks like? What is that lack of, not forsaking us and being with us? What do you think he's doing? You're not riding to the promised land on sofas, are you? Well, that's what's being shown to you today. What is my frustration with the Christian life? It's that I don't see the growth that I want. It doesn't seem like much is happening at all. In fact, if I looked at it and you looked at your own lives, that's your frustration. It doesn't seem like I'm really moving. You know, that's a long wilderness journey, and Israel did a lot of circling out in the wilderness. I seem to be going nowhere. But when you're able to see the whole picture and you're able to see what God is doing from beginning to the end, we learn that these figures, through these lives of people we know, we see how he is working. It's surprising. It's stunning. It's uncomfortable. In fact, you may not even understand right now, no rhyme or reason why you're stuck in the situation that you are. And yet, we have that very thing in front of us this morning, that the Lord is training this servant by the time he's done in the peaceable fruits of righteousness to those who are being trained by it. This is what we have. In chapter 32, it's a hard path of repentance. And boy, did Jacob need it. And so do you. Notice how he is working to conform him. Jacob goes on his way in verse 1, and we read that the angels of God met him. It's a really glorious opening to this scene. I don't know how much more glorious you get heading in. The angels of God met him. And Jacob, as soon as he sees the angels, he yells out, "This is God's camp." Didn't know it. This is God's camp. And he calls the name of that place Mahanaim, which is double camp. It means double camp. In other words, Jacob is understanding not just that the promised land is guarded by angels, but Jacob has come to a realization that God has been with him. Next to him has been an entire camp. He didn't see it. An entire camp of angels was alongside of his camp. And Jacob is absolutely enthralled and overwhelmed by this truth. This is God's camp. I had no idea. What a realization, isn't it? Remember when Elisha had asked that the Lord would open his servant's eyes when the enemy was coming? And Elisha said, "Lord, open his eyes and let him see." And as soon as his eyes were opened, remember what he saw. So the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Jacob is getting confident. Confident in what? God's presence. Isn't that the thing? Even in Acts that was announced, God's not far, but that we all struggle with, is God really present with me? Jacob's beginning to believe it. Jacob's seeing God's with me. I know his presence. What a perspective about life. The more that you come and know and believe, the more in confidence you begin to understand this truth. God's with you. What I love about this, as this confidence begins to build, something else begins to build. What else begins to build? Well, if God is for him, who can be against him, right? He had just heard Laban say, "God told me not to touch you, Jacob." God had put the death fear into Laban in a dream. And they parted peacefully. It was a beautiful scene at the end of chapter 31. Well, it's fascinating here, and I begin with the question then, what is the characteristic of somebody who's walking in darkness? Peace with their neighbor has absolutely no priority. They heap up conflict. They hold grudges. They avoid. People in these situations are used to running all of their lives, aren't they? They run the other way. I mean, how easy is it when you're in conflict with someone just to turn the other way and not have to deal with them, not have to face them? You can avoid your past this way, and you can do it for years. Well, something's happening in Jacob. Why do I say that? Who is on his mind? You remember what Jacob did to Esau, his brother? Boys and girls, do you remember this? He lied to his father, and he cheated his brother, and he hurt him, and he stole from him. He took everything from Esau that mattered in life. And here's what I'm seeing as I open up Genesis 32. God's presence has changed his entire outlook on things. Verse 3 says he's concerned to go to the land of Seir. Why is that important? Esau's there. Esau had become this powerful lord over that entire region, the kingdom of Edom. And everyone feared Esau. But I want you to notice what Jacob does here. Look at verse 3. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir, the country of Edom, instructing them, "Thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male servants, and female servants. I have sent to tell my lord in order that I may find favor in your sight." I really wish that the translation would have preserved what the old King James had there. I want grace in your sight. Grace. He's learned it. And it's on his mind. "Please, Esau, show it to me. I want to make this right." Here's what gets me. Mount Seir was not on the way. Mount Seir was way off the beaten path. Jacob could have avoided this by miles. Jacob could have gone the entire different way, couldn't he? Jacob, after all these years, goes there. And he sends all these blessings ahead of him. He sends all these blessings. When years ago, these were the very things. These were the very things he had stolen. What was promised, remember? The right of the firstborn. What's he doing? He's giving it back. Asking for grace. He knows what he deserves. Jacob has cheated his brother. And it's fascinating because in God's election, he had chosen Jacob to be the one who would inherit the blessing. But notice the reversal here on Jacob's part. This is what's always stunned me about this chapter. I thought, how many different ways could you go with this? And I only keep coming back to the single great answer to this. Notice what he says. "Say to my lord Esau." That is a title for somebody in way greater position. He puts himself in subjection. And you stand back from this and you look at this and you say, whoa. You can't do that. This is all yours, Jacob. He doesn't deserve this. Esau's a crazy man. How could you humble yourself like that? I mean this. How could you put yourself and humble yourself like that to that kind of degree before this worthless man? And here's what gets me. God will not let this child rest and come home until he's reconciled with his brother. He doesn't enter, he doesn't come home until he reconciles with his brother. You know, God even calls you to do that and love your enemies. The more I consider this and I see it so much on the pages of Scripture, all over the place, this is the great test of wilderness life. This is the great test of sanctification. You can talk all you want about being sanctified. This is it. This is where the rubber meets the road. It's fascinating as we look at this and we consider all that is happening here. What is motivating Jacob to this? God dropped a ladder to him years ago. Remember that? God drops this ladder to him and blesses him when Jacob had never asked for it, and Jacob had been running, and Jacob had been a schemer ultimately to his God, and God didn't treat him in response as he should have. God dropped the ladder in grace to him and said, I'll be with you, and I'm bringing you home. And it's that kind of gospel, it's that kind of understanding, when it really penetrates the heart, that begins to bear fruit in somebody's life. The response first is, why do you love a worm like me? And you'll see that in his prayer. Your life no longer becomes about you. It no longer becomes about rights. It no longer comes about pushing your agenda. It no longer comes about your name. We'll look at that here in a minute. Something has taken hold of you. When you've known forgiveness, some kind of fruit's coming out. Your outlook on people, your outlook on your past, you're not looking at people the same way. Your values change. And then you have to make right what's wrong. That's what you have here. That's what you have in Genesis chapter 32. He goes far out of his way to restore and to seek reconciliation. And you ask the question this morning, initially, do you have anyone who you need to go and do this with? Just to be very plain and direct. The Lord says, go. Go out of your way. Do it. Anyone who has hurt you or you have hurt, anyone whom you have sinned against, this is your path. Now, Jacob does everything he can next to compensate for the wrong. Notice this, he's restoring the blessing. And 550 animals are then given. 550 animals are given. And who does this sound like? Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I've defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold. Zacchaeus. So what happens? Well, in verse 6, this is what we read. And the messengers returned to Jacob saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he's coming to you to meet you, and there are 400 men with him. And Jacob falls into just panic. I mean, just panic. The very last words we ever heard from Esau in this section was, I will kill him. At the right time, I will kill him. 400 men was an army. Now, how's that for doing what's right?
Well, the whole thing is backfiring, isn't it? Well, we'll go on to continue our journey with Jacob as he finds himself on this sanctifying journey. And a name change that'll change his name to Israel. That's tomorrow. And this is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Well, in closing our time together today, I'm reminded of other resource materials we have available at our website that would complement what we've heard today. agradio.org is a great place to go if you would like to know more about us and take advantage of other resource materials we have there. And if you have a question that you would like to address Pastor Chris with. Maybe today's broadcast has sparked a thought or two, a question. Please, by all means, send it off to us. Now, you can either email that to us through our website, agradio.org, or better yet, voice it through your voice memo app. Record your question, your name, and where you're calling from, and then send that to questions@agradio.org. That's questions@agradio.org. You're also welcome to reach us by phone. The number is 888-504-8805. Abounding Grace Radio is also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can visit our website for links to the platform that you prefer to follow. One final note as we close out our program today, we are listener-supported, which means friends of the ministry come alongside and partner with us financially and prayerfully, ensuring that this program continues right here on this radio station. You see, we look to friends like you to help ensure that this broadcast continues to spread the gospel of grace wherever we're at. If you would like to be a part of that, a small gift, large gift, one time or an ongoing monthly gift, we'd love to hear from you. agradio.org. You can give securely online, 888-504-8805, or write to us, Abounding Grace Radio, P.O. Box 732, Linden, Washington. The zip code is 98264. Thank you for joining us today. We look forward to seeing you next time we get together for another broadcast of Abounding Grace with Pastor Chris Gordon. Abounding Grace is brought to you on this radio station by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries.
Hi, I'm Chris Gordon, the host of Abounding Grace Radio. I'm also the pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you are local to Southern California and live near the Escondido area, we would love to see you at one of our worship services on Sunday. We worship at 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. at the Escondido United Reformed Church, 1864 North Broadway here in Escondido. You can find us on the web at www.escondidourc.org. EscondidoURC.org. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.